A few weeks ago, we had a pastor's prayer retreat here at the church, and it was for 2 days, and it was both very inspiring and very tiring. When we'd finished, a little bit more so for me, I suppose I was hosting it, and you're always anxious that everything works well and everything's organized, and come 5 o'clock that evening, I was absolutely exhausted, but we had a great time. And one of the outcomes of the pastors getting together wasn't just to pray for our churches and things in our district and for people in our congregations and everything that goes on around us, but we were actually working on Isaiah chapter 6, and collectively, we didn't realize at the time, but we were actually putting together a kind of a sermon outline. And so I want to use it this morning, okay? I hope you enjoy it. I hope you find it easy to remember. And in a sense, I'm grateful for the way that God's church works together. And I really think that as we come together for our AGM at the end of the service after a coffee, it's really saying we believe we work together and God has blessed what we have been involved in. We have been involved in his work, and that's really what an AGM is all about. And the church, the body of Christ, is really a bunch of people of faith from very different backgrounds who wouldn't ordinarily come together, but we come together and we work together. The fact that we can work together is in fact a great miracle. It shouldn't work, but it does. And the passage from Isaiah chapter 6 is really a throne room vision that this man called Isaiah, young man, saw. It was a glimpse of glory. And it's probably true to say that at this particular point, he's not yet a prophet, even though it's chapter 6 in his book. You know, this is the greatest book of prophecy in the Old Testament. He's the greatest prophet of the Old Testament. And we're in chapter 6, but he's not yet a prophet, not technically anyway. And it's probably true also if we were to think of Ezekiel, for example, right from chapter 1, verse 1, he's a prophet. This is what it says there. It says, Ezekiel, in my 30th year, still a young man, in the fourth month of the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kebar River, the heavens were opened. And I saw visions of God. Well, right away he's a prophet of God. He's seeing something remarkable, and it blows his mind. And so, without a doubt, here in chapter 6, Isaiah sees the Lord, and he is seated on a throne, which just says volumes, doesn't it? It's amazing how many people have seen God, and he's seated on the throne. Remember the vision of Stephen as they're putting him to death. He looks up and he sees the Son of Man stand at the right hand of God, the Father Almighty. The Father's on the throne, but the Son has got off his throne to welcome his servant. And for Isaiah, it all began with the onset of a national disaster, the death of King Uzziah. If you want a kind of a date for that, it's roughly, we're pretty sure when it is. It's give or take a year, so it's 740 years before the birth of Christ. It's a long time ago. And King Uzziah started his reign when he was 16 years old. And he reigned for something like 52 years until his death. And he was a good king. And things were good under him. Life was wonderful under him. And although the authenticity of some of the dates are questioned by many people, I'm not getting into that at the moment. It's not important. But with his demise, the whole nation, in the year that King Uzziah died, from that year, the whole nation were at an all-time low. Has that ever happened to you? Have you been at a real, when I say low, I don't just mean here, you understand. I mean really low. Really low. Things are bad. They're not good. You're not coping well with what's going on. You feel so low that it seems that your world is about to come to an end. Now imagine the whole nation of Judah. It's a small nation, and that's what's happened with this announcement in the year that King Uzziah died. What are we going to do now? He's irreplaceable. You feel so low that you can't imagine it getting any worse. Perhaps that's how some Britons felt at the beginning of the Second World War. I'm not old enough to know. But maybe there's some people here. I did watch a program, maybe you did as well. It's been running for a few weeks, a couple of weeks ago. It was a young family, well, mom and dad and three kids, and they were dressing up in the clothing and living in a house with the furniture of the 1910s, and then the the teens, and then the 20s, and then the 30s, and then they got to up to 1940s. Anybody saw the program? Thank you. Okay. And what they said in the 1930s was they were surprised about how good things were. The food was good. People were being there was a lot of prosperity about things. Were looking really, really wonderful. Outlook was great. And then what happened? Then the war came. Then the war came and everything changed. Then they have ration cards for food. You can't just buy what you want. You've got to make do with very, very little. And then the workforce, the young workforce, all the young handsome men, they all go off to war. All-time low. Things are not good. There isn't plenty anymore. And that's what it felt like for Judah, this nation of Judah. The Assyrian Empire was on the rise, and they were ruthless and fearsome. They were frightening. And the national sense is captured in that great one-liner, in the year that King Uzziah died. It's as if we died too. And this is what Isaiah has captured here. The foundations of the small nation of Judah were shaken. It's as if the world had come to an end. Nothing is worth living anymore. This was surely the end. Surely it can't get any worse when you're that low. They were as low as they could go. When you're that low, only one thing can help you, surely, and it is to get a view of the throne room of God. And he's seated on the throne, and he's not worried, and he's got everything in his hands, and you look at him. And I thought at this point I'd discovered the answer to people's depression. You know, it's a real thing in the world today. Such a high percentage of people in our nation are on tablets to help them with depression. Because it's a real thing. And I thought I'd discovered the answer to people's depression here, but no. Maybe for some people. But not for Isaiah at this moment. Because as you read the account, after the low of Isaiah's death comes the woe. You can tell pastors put this sermon outline together, can't you? The low and then the woe. The first thing that struck me when I read this passage over in different translations was that when the prophet saw the Lord seated upon the throne, he saw himself as he really was. Let me say that again. I know now why we can't just live life on earth however we want while we're here, and then when we die, just hope to go immediately into the presence of God for a happy ever after hereafter. It's amazing how many people think they can do that. Here's Isaiah. When he goes into the presence of God, he's not a happy man. He doesn't think, this is wonderful, I can forget about everything else. He's immediately aware of how a sinful person he is. And that's because living in the presence of God is not meant to be a woe. It's meant to be the most wonderful experience ever. Listen to the words here in verse 5. Woe to me, Isaiah says, I cried. Woe to me, for I am ruined. I am ruined. I'm at the end of myself. For the life of me, it sounds like he's now lost absolutely everything. Looked up the word. Woe is a condition of great sorrow and distress. I hope you never get to a place like that. But if he thought the low was bad of the nation, his personal woe meant not only that they were living in a time of disaster, but that he, Isaiah, he was a living disaster himself. He was the disaster. Woe to me, I cried, I am ruined. And it reminds me that no one can walk into the presence of God with pride. No one can walk in there and say, I'm going to have a great time here. When you move into the throne room, sin is as crystal, is as clear as crystal. And I feel sure that what surprised Isaiah the prophet was not at that point the death of the of King Uzziah, but the presence of sin in his life. It's not that God said, hey, Isaiah, you can't be in my presence. It's as if Isaiah himself said, I can't be in your presence like this. I can't be there. I can't come into your presence the way I am. Listen to the whole passage here. It says, woe to me, I cried, for I am ruined. For I am a man of unclean lips, and I live amongst a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. Isaiah now is really at the bottom of the pit. This is as low as he can go. It's as if he has already improperly appeared before the king. And as if the king would just not stretch out a scepter and the servants would come and take him away. Because that's what happened when someone appeared before a king when he shouldn't do in those days. And here it is from the lowest and loneliest point of his woe, God responds graciously. More ruthless tyrants might just walk over you when you're down. Others might enjoy seeing you squirm. Has anyone ever done that to you? A more evil person might just let you suffer. There's been enough of those kind of people in our world. But this is the Lord of hosts. This is the God of compassion. This is the Lord Almighty. You'll see in the passage I've got here, it says, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. That could also be translated the Lord Almighty. It's a bit difficult to translate the word hosts. It could mean the Lord of the starry host, of planets and stars and galaxies and everything. Everything's been made up there. It could also mean the Lord of all armies, the armies of the enemy, the armies on your side, all the powerful forces in the world today. He's Lord of all of those. And it's as if the angels automatically knew what to do.